Hello, Cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 156 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, we are in the Rochester Cyclocross Offsite Media Center with Bruce Buckley and Zach Schuster from Cyclocross Magazine, and we're talking Rochester Cyclocross, a ton to get to, so I'm going to keep this short so we can get right into the show. But before we do that, I want to tell you about HydroShot. HydroShot is a portable power cleaner that uses Works 20-volt PowerShare batteries and pulls from any fresh water source. You drop the hose into a lake, stream, bucket. If you're on the trails, hook up the garden hose if you're at home. You can even use the HydroShot bottle cap connector to draw water straight from a 2-liter bottle. That's pretty sweet. Wherever you ride, you now have an instant water source. We are stoked to have the Works HydroShot sponsor the Wide Angle Podium, and we are even more stoked that they're giving you a deal. Works is offering our listeners 15% off of all HydroShots and accessories. They even put together a bike cleaning kit for you to check out. Get your Works HydroShot at yourcleanbike.com. Enter promo code CLEANBIKE, one word, CLEANBIKE. Here it's all caps. I don't know if it's cap sensitive. I'd go with all caps. Clean Bike at yourcleanbike.com, and you get 15% off any HydroShot item. That is yourcleanbike, yourcleanbike.com, and enter code CLEANBIKE at checkout. Hope to see you on the trails and on the cyclocross track. It is fall, riding hard and staying clean. Today's episode is also brought to you by Whoop. Whoop is the performance tool that is changing the way people track their fitness and optimize their training. Whoop provides a wrist-worn heart rate monitor that pairs to their app and provides an analytics and insights on recovery, strain, and sleep. Know when your body is recovered or when it needs rest by getting to know your nervous system through the heart rate variability and quality of sleep. Automatically track workouts, get strain scores that let you know how strenuous training was on your body, and see more data like average heart rate, max heart rate, and calories burned. Whoop has provided an offer for our listeners to get 15%. You get 15% off everything from Cyclocross Radio. 15% off purchase with the code CXHAIRS, CXHAIRS. Just go to whoop.com and use the code CXHAIRS at checkout to save 15% and optimize the way you're trained. That discount code CXHAIRS is for 15% off a 12 or 18 month membership. Finally, I want you all to go to wideanglepodium.com. Check out all of the great shows we have there. The Slow Ride is still going strong. There's new stuff on the gravel lot. Consummate Athlete Bike Shop CX is up and running and going strong as well because it is cyclocross season. Also, go to YouTube, youtube.com/CXHairs. Check out all of the coverage that we have up there so far from Roanoke this year and GoCross. And we're working on Rochester right now, but the main thing you need to do is check out the heat check. I want you to be a part of that. I want to know your opinion. Who should be aware? Are the power rankings right? Are they wrong? Let us know. Use hashtag CXHeatCheck on Twitter or Instagram and get in on the fun. And talking about fun, we're talking about cyclocross. And we're doing it with Zach Schuster and Bruce Buckley in Rochester, New York. And we're going to that right now. Came in to this weekend and kind of the season was admittedly a little down about it because I didn't know what direction everything was going to go. It seemed like we were losing races, losing the C1s, now even C2s were losing as well. And I'm like, man, what does it mean? It's like what the points do for riders has completely changed. Like they can't help their World Cup position by racing these races. It doesn't matter. Only the World Cups matter for that. You know, some of the requirements for Worlds teams aren't, you know, based on these UCI races anymore. So what does it mean? And I think one of the things that that after seeing the racing and seeing the environment that I came away feeling much better. And the interesting thing is that the limited number of C1s now makes these races that much more special. You know, you only have a handful, three races, as opposed to six or seven C1s, where
You're like, oh, well, if I don't race at this one, I'll race at the next one. And now for all of our top riders, it's like, oh, no, we have to be there.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that really raised the level of this one in particular. I think this was a big one in the past, but I think that again, I think it does take it up even another notch. I'd like to see that if this continues, I'd like to see even more people come out for this one. I think we had a pretty good, what do we have, like 45-ish starters per field, I think. Is that right? In the elites?
Yeah, I think it was. I think it was even. It was roughly about 45 for both the men and the women elite. And I think it was many of the top riders. I think looking through, we had like 7 of the 10 for both men and women top 10 finishers at nationals last year in the U.S. Not to mention our friends from Canada. We had 2 national champions from Canada. No, 3. I'm sorry. Check that. 3. So, yeah. I mean, it was like the riders came out and there was a sense in talking to them this summer that they were just looking at this weekend, a lot of them, and saying like, look, it's game on. Like, let's do this. We're hitting the World Cups, you know, right away. And so, you know, this conversation may be a little bit different come after because there's literally a week for more or less a week off. I think there's just the one race following the World Cups. So, you know, with this, it's just a very strong focal point for everyone.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And the thing that was interesting, you know, you mentioned the World Cup's coming up next week. And if you look at the men's side, what happened last year when it was not as strong in international field, you know, you didn't have the whole slew of Belgians and Swiss in the race like we did this year. Last year, there was kind of this agreement, and that was spearheaded by Stephen Hyde, that on day 2 of Rochester for the C2, he was like, look, we have these World Cups coming up. Every, you know, the best in the world is going to be there. You know, Matthew Vanderpoel is going to be there. We can't just sort of screw around on this course. We have to basically race as hard as we can, you know, more or less as a training race to be up to speed.
Like simulation. Yeah,
simulate of what we're going to see next week. And they did that. And they just absolutely killed each other. This year with the added, you know, added component of the Belgians being on site and racing hard and racing fast, that wasn't necessary. It was all out from the front. And Zach, you know, you sort of made the point, which I think was true, was that there was some pride there on the American side.
We're talking about the men's race jumping in. Yeah, for sure. And I think you saw it especially today. We're talking about the C2, even though I guess we agreed pre-recording we're going to do the C1 first. You saw, you know, Curtis took the whole shot. Steven,
and we also decided we're going to start with the women, and I've just sort of called an audible, and now we're going to talk about the men.
Okay, fair enough. Well, so the point I was going to make is you had 4 American men on the front, and they were like, they were just like, look, we're going to control the front of this race. And they did yesterday, too. So
well, the plan was yesterday, and let's talk about that. Let's talk about the C1. We'll start with the men for the C1 race. And yeah, I think that coming into this, and we all mentioned it, it was like, there were some comments made that we heard in the venue that were along the lines of, oh, this is a legitimate race because there's Belgians here. And my counter to that, or what I was thinking, was like, well, it'll be a legitimate race if the American riders do well against that Belgian talent. It's not just, you know, this isn't breaking away. This isn't, oh, the Italians are here. You know, it's no, if you want to be legitimate, then you need to be in a place where you're like, I can compete with anybody who comes into my house and wants to race.
I agree. I think there was for sure that sense. And, you know, I asked him about it and tried to get at it, but I don't think there was necessarily that like, explicit acknowledgement that was the case. But you know, you saw Curtis went out really hard yesterday. Steven had a bad start, but he got to the front. But you still saw Americans like attacking, going off the front. Steven attacked twice, you know, not showing any any worries or any fear in the face of the Belgians, where maybe in the past we would have seen them sit in and say, you know what, these guys are going to make a move at some point. I can't blow a match or I can't expend this energy. And they were just, they're willing to get after it. And it made for really compelling racing.
I think a big difference here, though, is the motivations. I think a lot of the Americans were doing, just as we said before, they're prepping for World Cups. These are the folks who are going to be on the grid and aren't necessarily doing the C1 to get points. But let's look at these Europeans who are here. They wanted points. They really wanted the points. That's really why they were there. I think a lot of the people who, you know, were at the front were like, well, they're among the Americans. They are going to be in the World Cup anyway. This is not any kind of issue.
Yeah, for somebody like Vincent Bastains or Dieter Zwick, you know, some of the others that were over here who are racing, even C2s in Belgium, their C2s are DVV races or C2s are super prestige races. Right. They're lucky if they're in that top 20. And, you know, they think of it. That's another thing. There's that pride thing too. They think that they can come, they are going to come over to the US, and well, as we'll find out, it's right that they're easier points for them to get. But for you, Bruce, a question, Zach alluded to it, is that we start the race, Curtis is off to a really strong start, Kerry Werner's right there with him, and Stephen Hyde is nowhere to be seen. And that was the question. We had seen Curtis, we had seen Kerry both at GoCross, both going well, you know, looking really strong. We hadn't seen Hyde since the end of his European, you know, racing and Worlds last year, where I think he was struggling still, you know, still not really recovered from the injuries that he had over the past season. So he was a little bit of an unknown entity. And then 2 minutes into the race, we're like, uh-oh, he's what, like 11th?
Right, exactly. And everyone's going, well, I was actually talking to him. I said, so what have you been doing this summer? Because you kind of been off the radar totally. He's like, no, I just kind of was unplugging and just, you know, family life and, you know, riding around. I mean, of course, he's downplaying everything. And so, yeah, when he's 20 seconds back, we're starting to go, wait, what happened? What did you do this summer? But no, what really happened was that just it was a matter of mixed surfaces not working out to his benefit. What really happened was that he had more of a file tread type tire because that was what was going to work best once he actually hit the grass, which is, I don't know, 80% of this course.
It's also 12 seconds into the race. That is a really long gravel.
Yeah, so what he does is he has to dig in to some gravel with some file treads, and that made for a fairly difficult start. And he basically just slid out and kind of lost the pedal, and then now it takes forever. Now he's literally got 20 seconds back because he has to now go through the crowd too. So he's just losing seconds.
Going to actually put a pin in that thought for when we're talking about the end of the C2 race.
Yes.
So Zach, so questions answered when you were talking about these races being hard and going out really strong, and Hyde's able to combat that, and within a lap he's already sort of, you know, worked his way through the field and is right up there in the front.
Yeah. Well, and Bruce, I believe during your interviews, he kind of pointed out, he's like, look, I could try to get back all of this at once and I'm going to make mistakes and, you know, it's going to cost me. And so he was really smart. He was patient about it. He worked his way up. You know, I think as fast as it was at the front, it did slow down a little bit. I mean, it's inevitable in bike racing. And so he was able to kind of catch back up. But it's, you know, it's one of those things that other riders talked about. It was like, this race was so fast. It was an interesting course, right? We had the quote unquote jungle section, which was probably in the first, we'll say third of the lap, first half of the lap, which had like an off camber at the entrance. It had kind of like a rip and ride where you went back and forth on kind of like this half pipe, and then it had a run up. And so that was really the most technical part of the course. But then it was like pretty open. You know, you'll see photos and video from quote unquote double trouble, just two drop ins or whatever, but that just breaks up. Like there's a lot of power on this course too, which means that it was fast, and that made it difficult to A, catch back on, but two, if you fell off, that made it really hard to get back on once you made a mistake.
I think it was Rochette 3 years ago who may have put a foot down and lost the race on that section that somebody, whoever was announcing it that year, coined it right at that point, double trouble.
I had heard about, I remember that.
It has stuck since then, but in reality, that section compared to any other technical feature on any other course really is not that bad, and not even close to the hardest thing on this course.
No, that's true. I guess it just looks cool. I mean, I know when that second one turns into a dust bowl, it looks really cool, and it's that steep drop in.
And during the amateur races, I don't know if you noticed this, there is a volunteer down there whose job it is to make sure that nobody like tumbles over the snow fence and falls into the river. Like he's there just playing like catcher.
I think that's a little bit there's like 6 feet between the fencing and the river, because that was the photo
6 feet of downhill.
What's that? I was standing in there. Come on now. That was,
yeah. You could hit your face on some concrete at some point. Okay. Isn't there anyway, a concrete embankment?
No. I was down the river? Oh yeah. I was taking photos down there, and you take another step and you're in the drink.
Oh. So another interesting thing about the course, I guess. So I stayed with the race director, Scott Page. And so he super involved in like talking to the athletes and stuff. And so it was really interesting. He said that, you know, Curtis White came up to him and was like, loved how much more technical the back section is, because Curtis is like, we go to Europe and we just, you know, we're riding this stuff at speed that's just so hard, and it's hard to learn that. But then one of the Euros was like, I love this course so much. This course was so much fun.
What's funny is because you weren't here, this is your first time here, right?
Yes.
And previously that sort of half pipe was really flowy. Like it was kind of like almost like whoops. Like you kind of go up the little bank and then get some momentum and then sweep over and then sweep down and sweep up. No, they've made it these jagged, harsh turns at the top that went a little bit higher and a little bit sharper, and people were getting hung up on them. Like they were really tricky. And the people I talked to, most people seem to think it was that very first one after you go onto the bridge and took the left. Like that was the hardest piece of the whole course right there.
Yeah, because that got like super dusty. I mean, as a regular off camber, it was challenging, but then as the weekend went on, it was getting just so dusty, and it kicks up like super steep at the top, and you saw traffic jams, and you know, so you talk, these guys talked about just jamming it to get to that section first, because you did not want to be seventh wheel in that big group at the front.
By the time it got to, at least in the men's race, the first four or five went through clean. By the time it got to 10, and it wasn't for a long stretch, but everybody was dismounting and you then queuing up to that. They were walking for two steps before it sort of accordioned out, and then they were able to run up the rest of it. So you almost came to like a dead stop off your bike, waiting in turn to be able to go up to that section. And by that time, the interesting thing is that takes you after those that section that we're just talking about. You go through the woods and you come back down, and you see the riders coming back down within a minute. And it's sort of that uh-oh moment. If you're still waiting to go up that first hill and you turn to the right and they're already like zooming down to the fast part of the course, and you're like, well, I guess I'll be fighting for the positions right around here from now on.
There is another one, another difference this year that I think was an important factor from that you didn't get to see that last year. They put a couple more twists and turns that were pretty tight early, because last year it was a bit of a just really wide drag race, wide open. Then all of a sudden you dive into this tree that has this crazy off camber, really, like, it just falls right off and it's all dusty and it's a 180 and it's really hard. And people would go in like 3-4 wide. I don't think it ever got more than 1-2 wide because there were so many little kinks.
Yeah, you're definitely slower coming in there. People aren't coming there full speed.
Yeah, it stretched out the field faster. So that wasn't an issue. That was a kind of a non-issue this year.
And then there's this very steep hill that comes right before the when you go under the bridge that we were just talking about, that I think Scott Page, the race organizer for years, was like, this is my signature feature. This hill is my signature feature. And then I think his hopes and dreams every year have been dashed because the elite racers get to it and they're like, oh, this is nothing. And they just, like, it was like, oh, this is a run up. And they're like, zoop, and like flying up and no problem. And every year he has changed it to try to make it harder and try to like scrub speed and make them work on this hill. And this year, I think he just like threw everything into it and basically gave them a couple kinks and then like, you are going to go straight up 180 the top and come straight down. And they were like, hold my beer, I don't drink, and just up it and no problem and back down. It was like not even an issue. And I didn't talk to Scott, but I'm sure he was like, there's nothing I can do with this to make this hard.
Well, the corner was during pre-ride, Hyde comes around. He's like, ooh, this corner is tight. So that my phrase for you. That's just what I heard from him. So it was like right down onto a path, but you know, they found a way to carry some speed to take it out a little bit wider and hit it pretty hard. So which was cool. It was on, I believe that part was on the Erie Canal, which as a water resources person, you know, spoke to me throughout the weekend. But it's actually really cool. There were probably about like 8 or 10 kayakers out there today. I know we're getting totally off topic, but there were a bunch of kayakers who were actually just chilling and cheering on cyclocross racers. So cool to see a different way of getting different outdoor enthusiasts exposed to the sport. So perhaps it did its job in a way, even if the elites kind of made...
They were confused by the sport and waiting for a home run ball.
wrong coast. But anyway, so, you know, so we're talking about the jungle, which actually kind of proved to be the decisive point of Saturday's race. Right, so we're 3/4 of the way into the race. There's a small group, but no one really broke away. You know, so like every lap, these guys had been fighting to be the first ones into that section.
Can I just back up? Maybe you can comment on this too. It didn't seem, you know, we're all running around trying to cover the race. Zach, I think you actually get a better look at or concentrating more on what's going on. It seemed like, you know, Dieter Swick and Vincent Bastains, especially Swick, didn't really like go to the front. They kind of let the Americans dictate things for a long time until like the last couple laps, and then finally decided they were gonna take over.
There was one attack that coming out of, I believe, Double Trouble. I believe it was Bastains attacked, and it was really interesting to see because Curtis White was all over that. Like, I mean, it was like a road, you know, someone making a move in a crit and Curtis being like, no. You know, and at that moment, Hyde then was able to bridge up, but it didn't really matter because it didn't go anywhere. But that was really the only big surge. But the big attacks came from Hyde. Like, Hyde laid 2 attacks down twice. He laid down 2 attacks. 2 attacks down twice would be 4. Yeah. Yes. So he attacked twice to try to split things off. And he got a gap, you know, both times, but it really didn't amount to things. So, yes, I think they actually did kind of sit in a little bit. And you know, I think Bastains definitely took advantage of that.
And then late in the race, you know, you're talking about Curtis White covering moves and looking really strong, but then, you know, what was the sense? You guys talked to him at coming into the last couple laps, he's fallen off the pace in a big way.
Talking to him today, I have to go back to the video and try to remember what he said, but he said he was still feeling pretty good. So I wonder if there was maybe a mistake in there, because that's another thing with that fast pace that Kerry mentioned. because he made a mistake, and he's just like, I was done. I was not catching back on. Like, you could not make a mistake. So it's one of those races.
It was a mistake, and he mentioned it. I think he was vague about it, but I think he just maybe touched a pedal or did something minor.
Yeah.
But minor in the sense that he didn't lay the bike down, but big enough that it didn't take anything to fall off the pace. Like, yeah. Carrie said that. Carrie was like, as soon as he made one little bobble, he was like just clinging to the back. And he said, he's like, I was just stuck there. I couldn't move up if I wanted to. I was just hoping to stay with that. And I think everybody kind of in that group, a lot of guys were like that.
Yeah, so you basically had to race a clean race and then race for it at the end.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I think Carrie might have, he might have alluded to saying that, I wish it was worse so I didn't have to try to keep going super hard. Because we're getting ahead, but like, Carrie turned himself inside out at the end of that race and actually came away with a pretty solid result.
He had a great result. Yeah.
Yeah, so Bastain, I mean, he knew that he could attack in the jungle. The jungle is, I guess they call it, you know, but that's one of those things. He's a European guy used to riding those technical features, and he got a gap in there and just went for it.
Just so if people aren't familiar with it, it's some twists and turns, and there is one little off camera section, and then there are two log obstacles that are not, you know, when you're in traffic, probably more difficult, but for those guys it was like nothing to ride, and they were doing it at speed, but that's kind of the technical aspects of that jungle area.
Yeah. So he went for it. And I mean, it was inside two to go. He held his advantage. Then, you know, Dieter Zwick went for it, and Hyde faded off his pace a little bit. So it had been together. And then, as happens sometimes, one guy goes for it, or one man or woman goes for it, and things break apart pretty
quickly. They said, I was asking about that, and they said that. I asked them if they all kind of looked around at each other, like, is anybody going to go after that? And I think they said they were all pretty much so blown that nobody thought. Yes, there was I think maybe Hyde and Zwick had both said, like, sure, I could try to go get that, but I would literally catch them and then blow up. I'd be done. You know, the amount of effort to catch him. I would burn all the matches and have absolutely nothing. And I know that talking to Zwick, he was saying that, you know, he just ran the scenarios in his head. And he's like, why am I here? I'm here to get points. I want second. I'm not going to get first. He ran it. He's like, there's no way I'm going to do that. I'm going to just stay here and do whatever I have to do to get second because I want the points. And that was the goal for him. So he decided to, I think he jumped, was it half a lap left?
Was it?
It was on the last lap.
Okay.
He didn't make his jump until.
You're right. It was the latter. It was kind of like midway through the last lap where things broke apart because they were all kind of together into that back section. They came out and you're like, there's room between every single one of these riders. as you're saying, I think it was just so fast and so hard that I don't think there were any regrets. Among, you know, many of the top riders, which is not necessarily going to be the case today on Sunday.
No.
Foreshadowing or getting ahead. But
no, that's fine. But just to run down the results. So Vinny B takes the win. Bastens takes the win. Dieter Zwick with a second. Hyde coming in third. Kerry Werner in fourth. Great ride by Gage Hecht, who was up near the front, I think, most of the race. He finished fifth. Curtis White, a little disappointed. Not a little. I think a lot disappointed.
A lot of disappointed.
Yeah, really disappointed in his result. In sixth place, the Swiss Tim Rugg in seventh place. Drew Dizzle Dillman in eighth place. Brandon Fix. We can stop and talk about him for a second because I think he was really, really pleased with that. He came into this season really wanting to see where he stacked up. He had a had, I think, is to date his best ride ever in a UCI race in Rochester last year in the C2 when he was in sixth place.
Yeah. So this, was that all Americans? Was there? I don't think there were any.
Of note, I don't think so. Yeah,
I can't think of anybody.
This is his best C1, and just looking around at the riders that he came in front of, I think he was pleased with that result. And then in 10th place was Kevin Kuhn. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was another one of the Swiss riders.
Personally, I have to do 11th place too, so that's Lander Locks.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Brandon was, and he was up in the mix too early on in the big group. It wasn't that he was relevant for a couple laps in that race, up in the mix with that group. So that was it was good to see.
Yeah,
for sure.
Another one, you know, Tobin Ortenblad. We came in. We were really curious to see how Tobin had bounced back from a disappointing season last year and broken collarbone, other injuries. I mean, just a slew of injuries.
Two broken collarbones.
Bones,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. So 14th place for him. I think that's a little TBD for him. Still to be determined on what's going to happen for Tobin. I think he was looking for a better result, but you know, I don't think it's worth writing him off at this point. Travis Liverman, who had a great weekend down in Go Cross in 15th. Same with Eric Thompson, also great weekend in Go Cross, coming in 16th place. And yeah, I think that's mostly notables. Lane Mayer, another good race, 23rd. I think he was on the podium for the U23s.
Yep.
Yeah.
Third place, I think.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's swing over to the women's elite race. And we can talk about how this one shook out. This is one of those times where we want to give equal time to the men's and the women's race, but the fact of the matter is it's kind of like the opposite of what we see in European racing, where it's really easy to spend a lot of time on the women's race because it's super competitive, and then the men's race is just Vanderpool winning by, you know, a minute. Magley Rochette was playing the role of Matthew Vanderpoel in this race.
I don't know what to say. I mean, my gosh, like she had a massive lead, like one lap into the race.
It's one of those things, you know, like going back to basketball, our big joke when we would go to watch college games and there'd be a foul called in the first 3 seconds, we all would all yell like in unison, "He's been doing it all night." This was, I think she may have had like a 20 second lead 10 seconds into the race.
No, she was, it was midway. You're getting a little ahead of her. That was today. Yeah. No, she waited, but I mean, she was together with Noble and Keo at Double Trouble. And when she crossed the line, she had like a 20 second lead. It was just like, and so I was on the backside, and admittedly, I was, because I'm a terrible journalist, my reaction to someone was like, "Holy shit." And someone else to me was like, "Holy shit." Like, she, I mean, she just blew that race up, like from the gut. Like it was impressive.
I think what's more interesting, you know, Magley Rochette basically owns Rochester at this point, so much so that they've renamed it to Rochester, and they did.
We're making it happen. Yeah, it's happened.
Sure,
it's a thing. It's not Rochfest. I was trying to make fetch happen in the middle of Rochester. Oh, and okay. it just wouldn't come out of my mouth.
Okay. Roll on.
We'll do it in the second take of this podcast. I think more notable, you know, I was gonna say Magley Rochette owns Rochester. She won both days last year, convincingly doing the same this year. And the more interesting part of this race is what's happening behind her.
Yeah, for sure. And so yeah, we had a group, I'm sorry, like blank there for a second. Yeah, I mean, so there was a group of riders, and I think last year, you know, one of the great storylines of American Cross last year was the rivalry between Rochette and Ellen Noble.
And I think from the gun, we were like, here we go.
Yeah. So, I mean, Ellen took the whole shot and the two of them were at the front jockeying for position. You know, they hit double trouble together. And then Rochette, you know, she kind of attacked. She said it was a test that she committed to, but it was still a test. And after that, it was everyone else was playing for second. And so things shook out, you know. Katie Keough, I think last year finished seventh, maybe on like the first day of Rochester. Like she was still there in the mix. So like she showed that.
I think she was coming off a cold or something last year.
But also, yeah, just a really slow start to the season last year, which, with the huge exception being winning a World Cup.
Yes, yes.
You know, but other than that, I think she was struggling a bit.
But my point being is that she was there. I mean, I think we saw that.
My point as well, is that the change this year is that we're seeing a stronger Katie Keough from day one.
Yes. Yeah.
I can tell you, talking to her, she was very upbeat. She would just seemed like she was in a very good place, just sort of confidence-wise and mentally. Just like she had a good time. She was very... spoiler alert, she did not win that race, but she said, she was like, no, I'm very happy with that result. I am tracking right where I want to be.
Well, and for sure. I mean, she's going to Europe. She's targeting Europe. She's probably targeting Jingle Cross. I mean, she always loves doing well in Waterloo, but like her goals start, you know, probably starting in around October when she heads to Europe. So, but my point was, is that, you know, I think we saw the Katie Keough that we expected to see for sure. Rebecca Ferringer had a little bit of a slow start, but she was motoring her way. I mean, but really the story, besides Rochette, we're totally burying the lead.
The revelation of this race was what, Zach?
I believe it was Claire Hansinger.
Yes.
Of the weekend,
for sure.
You know, and I guess we've seen it though. We've seen her be successful. I wasn't, you know, I had her pegged probably to like finish, you know, a fourth or fifth would have been like a great result for her. I think she's capable, but like the power that she showed, I mean, towards the latter half of the race, she dropped everyone. You know, she put the screws into them and rode away, which was impressive.
Yeah, she was absolutely flying and looking comfortable doing it. It was kind of funny. This is not a knock on the folks who were announcing the race because they did a fine job, but they were, you know, we travel with this. We see it every week. We know everybody pretty well, and they were just kind of trying to figure out who that was in second place for a while until it finally hit. It's like, it's Clara Hansinger. And yeah, she just no problem keeping up with the speed, no problem mixing it up with Keough and Ferringer and Mani and McFadden, you know, veterans out there, and just really comfortable in that mix. And even to the point that she showed that her technical abilities and power not only matched them, but at least on this weekend, a little bit better.
Yeah, it was interesting. There was one part of the course where she was really dialed in. It was kind of like, I guess, I don't know, the backside of the course. It was kind of like, had some uphills, it had some downhills, but it was kind of like a little bit more flowy up near the Belgian steps. It's really hard to describe. I didn't go back there very often because it was on the far side of the course. But I mean, that's where, like, you know, because she was basically dueling with Keough, and Katie Keough was 3 seconds behind her for all good lap, you know, and she held Katie Keough at bay. But she really picked up some time the last couple laps through that section. And so she was just talking about accelerating at the right point, keeping, you know, trying to stay smooth through the corners, but also carrying lots of speed out of it. And it seems like it was really mission accomplished for her.
Clara's fastest lap was her last lap.
That's pretty amazing.
That's impressive.
Yeah. And she didn't have anyone she was battling with to push her. She clearly just pushed herself to put in that fastest lap.
She must have had some of the fastest lap times too.
Yeah. I mean, Rochette came out and put down some really, early. But she to get that separation, like she had an 8:14 on lap two, and then an 8:16, but then at the end she was back to an 8:34. I mean, she had enough of a gap, so she wasn't worried about.
What was that Hansinger lap at the end?
An 8:20.
Okay, yeah,
yeah, and Keough also put an 8:20 on the last one, because maybe Clara saw her coming, but I think the gap was probably pretty good at that point between them.
7 seconds.
What?
It finished at 7 seconds.
Yeah,
I mean, I think she had extended to it. Actually, about 10,
you're right. Maybe that's what it was. Maybe she saw her coming, and then they just pushed each other. It was enough of a space.
She did, and I mean, Cannondale has those new white kits, and so it ain't blending in. Like you could just look back, and it was like Katie Keel was right there. It was. She was putting the pressure on, and it was cool to see. I mean, I think it was really neat to see that Clara was able to do that. I mean, Katie Keogh is one of the most accomplished riders in U.S. cyclocross, and you know, for her to stay focused, to stay composed, and to do that was really impressive.
That was also Keogh's obviously fastest lap as well.
Yeah, so a little farther down the line in fourth place. So it was Rochette, Hansinger, Keogh, Farringer in fourth place. Carole Magny with another strong ride after a good weekend down at Go Cross in fifth place. Really, I think a strong ride for Courtney McFadden in sixth place. I think that that's a rider who also coming back from both hips being operated on. So two hip surgeries, not really knowing where she's going to be. So really good first result for McFadden, and she may be on her way up as well. Great ride for Sammy Runnels in seventh place, Crystal Anthony in eighth. One of the riders we were happy to see out there because he's always a great person and fun to watch. The Canadian Jen Jackson in ninth place. You know, raced it at Mount St. Anne at Worlds, and then hopped right into cyclocross and was down here. And then Ellen Noble. You know, I think. She will not couch it as a disappointing ride, but definitely, I don't think what she was expecting in 10th place.
No, you're probably right. It seemed like, I mean, she was up there. She certainly started strong and faded back a little bit. And so I know she's alluded to it on social media. It seems like she might be dealing with some health issues or something. So, I mean, the way that she raced all of last year and her, you know, upward trajectory in her career, I think, be patient, and she certainly improved her result if we're looking at results on Sunday. So I won to watch, but I'm certainly going to be patient on how Noble season is going to go.
Yeah, and the one rider I think we're all hoping the best for, that if you followed our coverage from Go Cross, who was involved in that start line crash on Sunday, is Sonny Gilbert, who I think really, really took the brunt of that and is still dealing with that in a big way, and that she just cannot. She's okay riding, but anytime she sort of gets into that power position and tries to accelerate on the bike, she's still, her back and her legs, she just can't do it yet. And, yeah, so we're hoping that you know, gosh, it doesn't stop. There's really no downtime to rest because she's got to be ready for these World Cups coming up, and those are you know, some early season goals. Although I think she has a longer view and a bigger picture in mind as far as the season goes, so she's gonna be patient about it. But it's kind of just a raw deal for her that happened in the first race because she was looking fine before that.
Well, and speaking of, if we're going to talk about Gilbert, though, I think we just kind of, I feel like in a way we're alighting over her teammate Frenchie, Carolyn Mani. Carolyn Mani is, so I talked to her today. I sat down in the new Pactimo. They have a trailer. It's pretty dope. They had like bratwurst in there and beer, and you might want to find... Yeah, it's an actual horse trailer. Anyway, you know, they found new sponsors. You know, Van Dazzle actually is sponsoring them as a bike sponsor this year. And so they've teamed up, which is kind of a bit of an odd couple. Like, Carolyn Mani's dealt with some shit in her life in the last couple of years. You know, she went from finishing second at Worlds to not having a team, to getting on a team, to dealing with some personal stuff. And so she had a really strong start last year at Go Cross, and even I think at Rochester before... I guess more personal issues. She just looks strong. I was telling her, I was like, you know, you look like, they call her the animal, I think, and it just wears her emotions on her sleeves. But she was in the mix. She was attacking early. She was in that group that was chasing after Rochette. So I think she's one to keep your eye on, especially from the sight test. if we're talking about terrible sports analogies, she looked really good. And she's one that I have my eye on to see if she can continue to get these results as we move into September, late September, October.
She may be one of those people who maybe they race themselves into shape because, you know, you talk to her. And one of the big differences with her is that, you know, she's working a 40-hour you know, a week
yeah.
job now, on her feet a lot, not admittedly not training the way she wants to, obviously, because of her work schedule, et cetera. And she even said her training schedule this summer was not all that structured, which would be evidenced by the fact that she did e-bike worlds, I think, what, a few weeks ago?
Yeah, right before Worlds up in
Mount. She
yeah,
did that. Like she jumped before. In at the yeah. at the Colorado Classic, and then she also did some mountain bike races. So she pretty much just hit all the disciplines, you know. But I'm saying is that she may if she keeps doing this and she just races hard and she can do a little bit of training in between, that's what she'll need to get better.
And what I learned today, not the Pactimo cyclocross and gravel project, but Pactimo Colorado Proud.
Yeah, they told me that. I forgot what it was when I did my race report yesterday. I was like, I know they told me, and I was working on it at like 10 at night. I'm like, nah, it's what's on Bike Reg. But yeah, I guess that was they needed something, it came together it's, quick, and like they just Carolyn, that's what
yeah,
slapped
like yeah. put in there. Yeah,
that's pretty funny.
Yeah. Okay. Any other riders of note, Bruce, or should we move on to Sunday?
Oh, I think we can move to Sunday. There's so many riders of note.
Yes.
But yes, yeah. We should move to Sunday.
All right. And should we just stay with the women for this and talk about the C2 race?
Yes.
Okay. This one was the one that I got. Well,
it was
different in that. So
it is a little different.
It was a different, and the course was a little different. And yeah. Actually, Bruce, maybe you can just start because you were talking to Becca Farringer, and I think that she may have had a hand in the changes that took place. Just because the one great thing about Scott Page, we're talking the organizer, is that he wants to give the racers who show up to his event the best experience possible, and he is not one of these race organizers that's like, I know what's best and I'm not even going to listen to change, and if there's a suggestion and you know he thinks it's a valuable one and something that's worth implementing, he's going to do it. And we've seen it every year, little changes being made. He wants to make it so that they come out and they're competitive and they have the race that's going to make them better and it's going to be fun to watch. So Start of this race, different than yesterday.
Absolutely. And Becca heard that he was very open to suggestions. So she came up with an idea where there'd be basically like a prologue. And instead of going, that the course sort of, I don't know, maybe it's a quarter of the course and then you're in the jungle. Or have we determined that? Or a third of the course?
I call it a third, but yes. Yeah, it happens relatively quickly. Yeah, it happens pretty quickly.
But basically, what they did was they, instead of taking you in that direction, they looped you back, and it was about 3 minutes.
The result of how it was and what we talked about, just to remind people, is that, you know, we're talking, what I was talking about, people coming to a standstill, that happens within 3 minutes of the race start. So you're there and like, it's already, the race order is determined. You're either at the front or you're like way back chasing.
Exactly. So what they did is the back half of the course is not a grass crit, but it's more in the open field, you know, in the grass. And so they looped him back and let them do most of the back half of the course, about 3 minutes, I would say, probably worth of course before they brought him around. They could still have the huge, wide landing strip, you know, to go down for a while and then just kind of throw down the power and let it start to naturally kind of shake out a bit before they got into those tight, twisty turns and then hit the jungle. Yeah, Becca suggested that. It sounded like a good suggestion. I'm sure there was a bit of a self-serving element to that because she does like those power sections. Money calls her the horse. And honestly, you know, that's we can get into that more, but that was a big factor in both days, actually, in the way that she looked at her race. There's a big contrast between how she handled day one and how she handled day two, but I don't want to get too far ahead of that. But yeah, that was her idea, and I think it was a good one. I liked that. I thought that it it took out, yeah, the element of things just getting backed up, which just seems a little bit unfair.
Right. It gave more people who may have gridded farther back an opportunity to be a part of the race and work the ways up. And I think that was the case where folks were able, I actually saw some from the back row who were able to sneak around and work their way up pretty quickly through there. But Zach, at the front of the race, it really didn't matter.
Well, along those lines, though, it's one interesting Becca said in when I talked to her after the race is she, at the front at least, still no one really passed anyone because it was just so fast. She was like, you know, at least at the front that it didn't necessarily affect things. But she also had a much better start. She was second wheel versus like, God knows how far back she was. So that certainly affected, I think, her ability to race. But yes, as you mentioned, 3 minutes into the race, you know, Magalie Rochette won the whole shot. And 3 minutes in the race, she already had 5 second lead. She already had a lead. It was gap. It was, I don't
know. Yeah. No, I was, man, was it all the way to 3 minutes? I mean, she was up the steps. Already had like a 3 or 4 second lead there.
Oh, so it happened that quick. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. By the time she got around to the start-finish line, I think it was over 5 seconds.
Well, and so when I look at her and the way that she raced this weekend, I see an analogous situation to what we started with the men in terms of how Hyde pulled everyone aside last year and says, it's send it Sunday. For her, she's done quite well. I think, you know, talking to her earlier in August, you know, she talked about how she's accomplished many of her goals. She's won Pan Ams. She's won Canadian Nationals a couple times. Like, she's shown that she is one of the top domestic women. Her goals are very much Euro-based and World Cup-based. And so these two races coming up are massive. Like, there's no question she'd be the first to tell you that her results last year were disappointing at the two World Cups. And so she's just like, look, it was full gas. Like, I need to get ready for next week because I want to win. Like, she wants to win these World Cups.
Well, if I understand it, though, didn't she have something happen at the start of one of the World Cups last year? And then she actually ended up having very good lap times, but it was something that went wrong at the start for her. And that,
but that's still a disappointing result.
Yes, I mean, it is. I'm just saying, I think that she just, yeah, it wasn't a matter. She was clearly, she had the fitness.
Yeah.
Like, she was ready for a good result.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she, the C1 at Jingle, she threw down with Kat Nash off the front. So, I mean, she had good legs. But I guess my point is that she took that Stephen Hyde mentality and she's just like, I'm gonna throttle it. And today she was like, look, I'm going full gas. And if you can catch me, good luck. And it was clear that no one was going to
do that. Yeah. I asked her about that. Yeah. And she said, I asked her if, she figured like, well, I can just, you know, how do you go about racing yourself? Because you don't have anybody pushing you. And that's what she said. Yeah. That she was just looking at that, like Hyde does. Exactly. I have to go full gas. I have to do a race simulation, whether I have somebody on my tail or not.
But, you know, building off our revelation of the weekend, the rider who decided, well, at least we're going to try to pretend like this isn't going to happen was Claire Hansinger. You know, Hansinger, the newly minted elite, which I joked with her about. And she's like, Zach, I've been racing at this level for a long time. I'm like, but you're 23 now. And she was not having it. Yes. Yeah. So she was not having it. But, you know, she was one of the younger riders at the front of that field. And she took it upon herself to be the one to go after Magalie Rochette. And like happens a lot of times, like when there's someone who's really fast, sometimes you get the benefit of dropping everyone else while you're trying to keep up with the really fast person. I think that happened to a little bit of an extent today because she had a much bigger gap, I think, back to third today.
Yeah, for sure. It was 13 seconds from Hansinger to Fahringer at the end of the race, you know, and I was going to say that the chasers starting out, Hansinger, Fahringer, Keo, sort of the same names we were talking about, Mani there, Ellen Noble, better time for her, I think, you know, with that chase group, pretty much the whole race, but eventually Hansinger was just out there on her own, and, you know, she was nice enough to let me put a GoPro on her bike today, and then being the extremely nice person she was. She was apologizing at the end that it was, she was like, well, it's probably going to be boring because it's just a lot of open space. I really wasn't racing around anybody today. And I'm like, that's because you were that far ahead of the rest of them, except for Mag Lee, who was uncatchable. I was like, you don't have to apologize for that. That's what you should do.
Yeah, I hate like touting my own stuff, but like if Claire Hansinger is a name that you aren't necessarily super familiar with at this point, I did an interview with her last fall at the start of the cyclocross season. She's this really interesting person worth getting to know. You know, she's back in college this year right at the airport. I was like, oh, congrats, you're back in college. She's like,
this is Midwest versus East Coast. I would have just been, go listen to the interview I did with her. Ouch.
That's a fair point. It's like
We got to work on the self-promotion, okay. Zach.
Well, I mean, if, yeah, okay. But anyway, we don't need a case where it was funny. the announcer again, poke a little bit of fun at him. But he's like, so are you planning to do some racing in Europe? And Claire is like, and so after today's race, I was like, so Claire, are you planning to do some racing in Europe? She's like, yeah, I'm planning on turning 32 at some point, you know, I might get dinner, you know. So it's like, she's got a sense of humor. She's a fun kid and worth getting to know. And I think we're going to get to know her pretty darn well here these coming years.
Do you remember where she made the move? I think it was like lap 3 somewhere in there when she made her jump. Did you have that in your notes somewhere?
Hold on a sec.
Oh, you have your little notebook.
My one of the kids in Wisconsin calls this my Blues Clues notebook.
Fantastic. I love that. Love that.
I think you should get a little mini Trapper Keeper.
The Blues Clues notebook doesn't lie, though. I was able to find that pretty quickly. So it was lap 2. Lap 2 officially.
So yeah. She was away for, well, I would say a long time, but you know, we were definitely on the short end of the legal limit of races with Magley crossing the line at 43:59. I know that is perfectly well within the limits of a legal race.
We did have people
race.
Come in over 50 minutes. I get it. But there was a long gap between the end of the women's race and the start of the men's race. It's not like the schedules were right on top of each other anyway.
But that's like, we talked about this, I think, oh man, maybe the first time we sat down to chat. It's just, it always seems to tend towards the shorter. Like we could have done the math, right? You know, Megali finished in 50:16 on Saturday. And so you figure out what that prologue is going to take and you add that and get a sense of probably where it would be at. And looks like it probably about 52, 53 minutes. Prologue.
Took her 3 minutes.
You know, and so I guess that becomes that tight spot because, you know, she's finishing then, but then your last rider on the lead lap is finishing in an hour. I guess they don't want that. Yeah. I don't know. It's just, it's weird, but like just adding that prologue created a weird situation though, from the time standpoint.
We are also just self-serving in A, we want them to be able to get the racing in, and
we wanted more pictures,
and B,
man.
We want more time to be able to cover the race.
Yeah. I got robbed. But you know, the I don't know if they it was a faster course. I don't know if it's because it was a little bit shorter or it was just drier or what, or little tweaks in it. It was a faster course today. If you look at the times, it was a faster course. Do we have any ideas?
No. The only thing that I saw is
yesterday was openers.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. But so we were talking about Rochette and how she was just basically going to go all out, you know, and she did, but she was incredibly consistent and much faster than yesterday. Like she was an 8:11. A 8:08, 8:09, 8:13, 8:13. I mean, that's pretty incredible. You know, that's, you know, it, that if you allow for a little bobble every now and then, that's pretty
or
astounding.
Even just like taking your foot off the gas at some point.
Yeah, at some point saying, I'm getting a little tired.
Yeah, no, it was, I mean, it's one of those things where you see just how smooth she is and you see like what cyclocross can be. I mean, she was just damn near perfect this weekend. It was impressive to be able to see in person.
if we run down the standings here, so we had Rochette winning, Hansinger in second, Ferringer in third, Katie Keogh in fourth. So, you know, great result for Becca getting on the podium today. Carol Money in fifth place. Ellen Noble, better finish today in sixth place. Jen Jackson, still looking strong in seventh place. Not top Canadian, though, only second Canadian. Courtney McFadden in eighth, Sammy Runnels in ninth place, and then Ruby West, third Canadian. We don't like calling out first Americans, but I'm going to call out first Canadians.
All right, that's fair. Yeah.
Raylan Nuss in 11th, Crystal Anthony 12th, Sonny Gilbert in 13th, Eric Zavetta in 14th, and then, you know, a name I think that we definitely have to bring up here in 15th place, Lily Gonzalez, top 20 for the 16-year-old. She's another one definitely to keep an eye on this season.
Yeah, for sure. You 23, and obviously, and they don't have the junior category. If they did, I think that we'd be talking about her a lot more.
No, I mean, Lizzie Gonzalez is probably going to be one. I mean, she is slated. She is on the trajectory of being the next star of American Cross. Like, her name is one that has rung out in the Northeast. I think that if you pay close attention, you kind of know her name. So interesting one too, I guess. That was interesting talking with Curtis. So we just did an interview with Lizzie because she was at Montana Cross Camp, and so last year she raced against the Cat 3 men. The rider who had done that before, Emma White. So she saw that Emma White had done it, and she decided that she was going to get that experience as well. And so it was awesome to see just how confident she was too. I knew a number of the 17-year-old women racing age 17 from Montana Cross Camp racing in their first races here. And it was really cool to see how positive and the energy coming off of them. But just to see Lizzie and the confidence and how she raced is phenomenal. So I'm sure she's ecstatic with that result.
I didn't want to let this go. I thought that one of the better battles today was actually Becca and Keogh. I thought that was a pretty good fight for that third spot. I mean, it was obvious who's going to get one and two, but those guys were right on each other a little bit back and forth. Like, that was fun to watch that one.
Definitely two different styles there of racing a bicycle.
Absolutely. And I didn't get to talk to Katie today. Did you talk to Katie today at all? Okay, I talked to Becca, and as you did too. And she obviously ran a much smoother race. I think she, you know, she made a few mistakes day one, and she had a little bit of, you know, dirt on her.
Well, she said that
she didn't have any dirt on her jersey today. So, you know what I mean?
She said the little badger made a mistake in the last lap at the same spot that she biffed yesterday.
Yes.
So that was kind of funny. She was like, well, I got that out of the way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting to see when you come to these weekends to see how the difference between or how a Saturday race can affect a Sunday race and what lessons are learned or, you know, people who might go a little too deep on.
And she was a lot more cognizant of the fact that people were just sitting on her in those power sections and just relaxing and letting her, not relaxing, but, you know, I mean, be able to pull it back a little bit while she pulled them around. And so I think she was making sure that Katie couldn't just get a free ride, and she would punch that a little bit and not let her just sit on the wheel. So it was a good fight.
That's cool to see. poor Katie Keogh involved in like the two like close battles, but I'm sure she'll certainly benefit from it.
Exactly.
When it really, you know, in the coming weeks.
So let's get to our last race that we want to talk about, and probably I think it's fair to say this was the best race of the weekend. The men's lead from today.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agree. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we talked about what happened on day one with the Belgians kind of getting their way with Vinny Bastian with taking the win and Dieter Zwick, you know, as Bruce was talking about, knowing that there were a lot of points available and he wanted the most that he could get. So he wasn't going to chase down his countrymen, but rather just make sure that he was going to save his matches to secure second place, and that's what happened. And I think this is, you know, where I jumped the gun at the beginning of our conversation, talking about that, you know, we saw a little bit of pride from the American contingent out there, and they really, especially the Cannondale cyclocross world guys who just had a plan yesterday, didn't really go the way they wanted. They were kind of doubling down on that plan today and were really able to make it stick. And even at the beginning of the race, you know, and Curtis was out front and Hyde is right there. And it sort of reminded me a lot of what we heard from the sidelines at Nationals, where Hyde is in Curtis's ear, just telling him to keep going, keep pushing. This is it. This is go. And just almost being a cheerleader for Curtis, doing the same thing today. I mean, just like, come on. And just like basically yapping at him to let's go. And they stuck by it. I don't know if Curtis likes that or not, but Steven is definitely on him to make sure that they execute their plan.
Well, and I guess part of what Steven recognized is that the main Euros got off to a bad start, and so they were not sitting first and second wheel. And
one of them, I have it on video. I haven't gotten a number. Maybe it was Bastin's within. So we were talking about that new, you know, doing the back half first and the speed before they got to the steps. There's a little the farthest turn on the course before it goes up to the speedway section. He tried to cut in on the inside, got it absolutely wrong, and just tangled up in about four riders' wheels, including his teammates. So two of the Belgians on the the Group Hens team.
Mm-hmm. I'm guessing it was Bastian's, because like he was chasing and he was dangling and just did look nothing like he did yesterday.
It definitely makes sense, because I'm sure that those guys heard it. And then there was also that opportunity, because they loop back, so they could sort of get a peek over their shoulder and see that, oh, those guys are just getting back on their bikes.
Because I heard Hyde...
They never really got off their bikes. They had to go foot down. It was a fast section. They had to go foot down.
No, Hyde was talking to someone. He was talking about how he was telling the Americans to be like, guys, we got to go. And they did. They controlled the front. It was White, then Steven, then Kerry Werner. You know, another strong start. And I think Gage Hecht was the other rider. It was the four
Gage was up there at the beginning, you know, just unfortunate for him. He was having bike issues and just wasn't, you know, whatever was going on, just wasn't shifting the way he wanted to, and so it was already falling back, and then had a, you know, one of the rare people who actually went into the pits and changed bikes.
But yeah, so like this is something that Bill and I kind of mentioned this after the race. I mean, Curtis White, Stephen Hyde on the same team, and to them, Cannondale winning is the most important thing coming out of a race. It's a juggernaut, man. We're looking at a juggernaut between those two. And I bring that up because the Euros both mentioned it. They were like, you know, the Cannondale boys were trying to control the front all day on Saturday. So, I mean, I think we should get used to this.
Yeah, and if we jump ahead, Curtis was able to get a lead. And really the battle that was going on, because Dieter Swick wanted no part of it. He wanted to be in front of Steven Hyde, and Hyde would get in front. And I don't know if he actually said this to you all, but you could see it. He'd get on front, and it was a little bit of a Saturn sit-up. It was just a little bit of soft pedal, a little bit of keeping the Belgian behind him, and it's kind of just, you know, impeding him, slowing the pace a little bit, just to give Curtis that opportunity to continue to get out there. So I really think, and it's cool to see, because you don't always see it, even though you're on the same team, you don't always say teammates necessarily, especially in cyclocross. And I maybe it was just something I was seeing that wasn't really happening, but it really looks like they were working together.
I mean there was the long stretch after Double Trouble when Curtis was in, you know, full send attacking, and Steven was on the front, and I was like, it was a vintage like road soft pedal at the front. I mean, I was just like, wow, that is. And I think there was like a lack of sense of urgency, and so they let him do it. You know, no one tried to chase that down, and Steven was like, you know what, my teammate's up the road. So I thought that was cool. You know, I mean, I think there's, you know, the points are individual, obviously, for Cross, but, you know, you saw that and you talked about the cheerleading that, you know, I don't know if he's a mentor necessarily, but I don't know, man. If I was on a different team, I'm worried about those two guys coordinating, working together. Cause,
and that's not to say that, you know, like if not for Hyde, White doesn't win, because he was by far the strongest rider out there today.
Yeah, I would say that for sure. But one thing that was going on too, though, and the lap times show this, is that White was falling off a little bit off the pace compared to, they were closing that gap, as we all saw, like probably 3 to 4 seconds per lap on the last three laps, which, you know, he won by 7 seconds. So,
he needed those seconds that Hyde provided him.
He was going so hard. There was I saw one where he came through, the planks, and we talked about that big off-camera section around this tree and around it, and then there is a course crossing that I think these people just crossed, because they only had one cross, so they just came across, even though she had the flag up on the other side, and he was right there, and it just freaked him out, and he was just couldn't even yell, like, get out of the way, you know, and then they jumped out of the way, and he was going, and just right after that, he almost just bit it into a steak. I mean, he was just like, just so much power, just trying to hold on to this lead and like swerving into the tape. And yeah, I was like, oh God, just keep it up, right? Let's go. Yep. Then that was with, I think, a lap and a half to go.
Yeah, it was. And it was getting, I talked to Steven a little bit about that. It put him in a weird position where it's like, I think that Steven would have liked to have been able to not have to go to the line, obviously, not to get ahead of that, not to go to the line with Sweck, but
he didn't want to put in an effort.
He couldn't put in the little attacks that he would have needed to try and shake him, because then he ends up just closing the gap. So
yeah, that's a good point. That's generous on his part.
He just had to kind of like, you know, work him a little bit and try and like stall and do all these funny things. But he did put in some attacks on the, I didn't see it because I was preparing, you know, for the finish, but talking to him, he said that's where it happened, was all that last back part before the steps and all that stuff that he tried to put in those moves. And I think he got them just before the steps, but then he realized, oh no, now I'm leading out the sprint.
Right. And what I alluded to, where I was putting a pin in it, is you have to be thinking about that same issue he had where he could not get purchase, could not get a lot of speed on the gravel section. Now he's sprinting on it under those same conditions.
You know, he didn't mention anything about that. I didn't see him slide out, but it's, you know, you'd have to think that maybe it's just, if you just lose a tiny bit each time with each revolution, yeah, maybe. But I think he was just tired. I think that was just
his foot was cramping too.
Like
when when we were going back to the trail, he's like, my arch is cramping like really bad. So I think
he didn't walk away from that going, I had that, and I just, when I talked to him, he said that hurt, and I said, did that hurt because you got third, or that like just hurt? He's like, no, that really just hurt.
So, to describe what happens at the end, photo finish with Dieter Zwick in a bike throw beating Hyde for second place. But Zach, walk us through what that sprint for second looked like.
Oh. Yeah, so I think you used the technical term in bike racing of argy-bargy. I don't know if it looks like maybe Sweck had started to drift into Steven's line a little bit, but there was definitely, it was not a Sagan like elbow, but there was definitely some rubbing his racing that went on between the two of them.
They came across with a lot of contact, elbows leaning on each other, you know, hands stayed on the bars, but they were definitely exchanging sweat as they came across the line.
It was
pretty controlled,
though. I mean, it was like, it wasn't like a sharp thing or anything. It was kind of like a get out of my space. And
just liked that they were fighting for it. I mean, they were going all out for it. I mean, it was cool to watch.
Well, I think that, you know, first of all, they came in hot, so they're sweeping wide to the outside, which is their right, our left, as we're looking at them on the finish. And Hyde is on the inside pushing Sweck, who is just behind him, kind of not right into the barrier, but over that direction. So there may have been a little bit of, I don't know if he was trying to close the door on him and get him a little nervous over by the side there, or if it was just that's where they ended up. But I could see, you know, Sweck needing to kind of make a little room there for a minute, you know, and then it just turns into RG Bargy, as you would put it.
I mean, it looks like the difference might have been that it looks like Sweck bike through before Hyde.
I will tell you this, that when Sweck leans in on him, I can see Hyde's tire, his whole back end actually kind of gets pushed a little out. He can't hold his line straight. He actually skids a little bit to his left, our right. And this isn't asphalt. That means he's actually drifting at that point because it's gravel.
So Hyde's recommendation to Scott Page will be to pave the start for next year.
Yeah.
By the way, I love how we just Zapruder'd a sprint for second. I love that.
If you want a Zapruder stuff, I'm going to go into how many steps that Curtis White takes up the stairs versus Stephen Hyde and the rest of the field.
Can we talk about the heat check power rankings instead? You're going to get shit on Instagram for that or whatever. I think though, like, I mean, I'll introduce this because it's your thing, but it seems like the CX heat check power rankings are already starting to take hold. It was a topic of conversation among riders in person on social throughout the weekend, up to and including the new politics of Cross, the GoPro selection.
Bill,
can you walk us, tell us a little bit about GoPro selection and how that played out?
What
was the politics of it?
Well, it's having to, you know, wanting to, you know, we're trying to produce coverage that gets you all who are watching a much better look at the races, you know. So this year we'll have at least two people with cameras outside, sometimes if we can swing it, a drone like we did at GoCross, and then on top of that, really trying to put at least two cameras per race. So two during the men's race, two during the women's race, and you know, you trying to pick who you think is going to be in a good spot in the race. The problem is that you want one camera on the front of somebody's bike and one camera on the back of somebody's bike, and riders aren't dumb. And they quickly figure out, especially if you're asking the same person more than once or their teammate or something like that, and you're saying, hey, can I put a go, you first just ask the question, can I put a camera on your bike? And they're usually like, sure. And then it's like, is it okay if I put it on the front? And then they're like, okay. And then usually it doesn't happen right there if this is the first time. And then they're coming back this, like today, it happening in gritting. They're like, so you want it on the front and not the back. Does that mean you think I'm going to be farther behind instead of ahead? And that's where what you're talking about, that's where you sort of have to sweet talk your way into, well, you know, it's going to look really good. You're starting, you know, here. And then when you go through all those people, then it's going to look good. And you may have one person. You don't want to be leading the race. You know, you want to be drafting off somebody. So you want to be behind them. So it's all tactical and it's fine. Yeah, but it's definitely a conversation that has already happened.
So is it fair to say that the algorithm would determine that One through five. GoPro position 1 through 5 goes on the back, and 6 through 11 goes on the front.
You know, that's a good point. I should just start. I just should start using that as a reason why, because as we know, the
wait for it. Please do it.
Algorithm don't lie.
Yes.
And if it just shoots out that this is where these people are finishing in the heat check, then that really determines where the camera goes. And all I have to say is algorithm don't lie.
That might actually be your best. I mean, it depends on the amount of how steely your resolve is. That might be the way to do it.
I will say this, just knowing how the algorithm does churn out data, that I know the thing about this, the whole conceit of the heat check is North American racing, but it's not North American racers. So if somebody comes in to the US like a Dieter Zwick or a Vincent Bastains and they sweep it, then they're going to be up there high in the heat check. That's just how it works. You know, they're racing in North America. They have to be given credit for that. You know, of course, it doesn't take into consideration what they did last season, which of course we know that is part of the algorithm, at least for these early weeks. So it was good to see that they didn't sweep the weekend. You know, I want to see some of our American cyclocross friends still near the top. So that I think that once we throw all that data in there, that gives a better opportunity for some of these American riders still to fare well.
Well, I will say then, I'm curious to see, because I think if you look at on the women's side especially, I think it felt like the way the algorithm ranked riders for the preseason, it seems like Euro results did play a pretty big role, some kind of role in determining those. You know, both Katie Compton and Katie Keough had really solid Euro results at the end of the season. I mean, Katie Compton is Katie Compton. But that said, you know, Compton hasn't raced. We just saw a very, you know, dominant performance here. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what the algorithm says on the women's side, to see how that shakes out. And it's a little bit noisy on the men's side, too, yeah, for sure, because you had a first and a sixth versus 2/3 among our.
Yeah. No,
incumbent top two.
I'm sure right now with a first and a sixth, as opposed to I was going to say, you know, Kerry got six on the second day, so I'm not. I think, he's got some. If I know how the numbers seem to crunch out, he's got his work cut out for him. I think that goes without saying. You know, it's going to be really interesting. You know, guys like
Vinny B
out there, but even like Eric Thompson down farther, Travis Liverman down a little farther. You know, some of the folks that were in there, I think we're definitely, you're right. Noisy is a great way to describe it. I think there's going to be a shakeup, you know. On the other side, again, the angry letters are going to come, Ellen Noble may even drop some more. I don't know. We're gonna have to see how it plays. She got a sixth place. That's where she is. So maybe where she is where she is.
Well, so I had we had joked about somewhere. I think we had joked about, you know, those 10th, 11th spots, especially at some of these smaller races. You get a chance for like quote unquote regional heroes or some folks that you might not expect to jump in.
I mean, that's in part of it. When all the equations were being worked out, that 11th spot does have kind of that sort of factor of underdog factor to it.
So. Knowing that we haven't put the numbers in the algorithm, taking at this from purely a subjective standpoint, who are your heat check riders from the weekend?
Heat check riders from the weekend. It's
like heat seekers.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think you mentioned one, Brandon Fix. I think definitely a heat check rider. You know, depending on how age plays into it, Lizzie Gonzalez could be a heat check rider.
There was New England always comes strong, and I definitely had some people lobbying for, you know, you can lobby all you want. I have no control over how things get crunched here, but yeah, definitely some folks letting me know that she should be in the running. So yeah, that's definitely one that I think is going to a name that's gonna be in consideration. I do think that like you were saying, that top spot in the men's is gonna be really interesting to see what happens there. I mean, is Curtis White gonna be able to do it? I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think on the women's side, I mean, geez, Magli Rochette.
You, I mean, there's something wrong with your algorithm, Bill, if she's not number one. I just have to.
Not number one. Ooh, all right. I mean, so.
I think there is history involved in this algorithm.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, it's really like, so.
What's your coefficient of decay?
It's so like, heavily weighted with Katie Compton that that was the whole thing. That was like the, you know, it was Keo last time. Can she put in such dominating performances to take over number one? Now you're looking at someone who's at number three. Is she able to buy these two performances? Were they dominating enough? I mean, look at who she was racing against. Was that a strong enough field to be able to overtake Compton? I don't know.
Well, but there's also the bias towards racing. So, just looking through another shout out. One other one.
Of course, I think is going to be making some moves.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. Another heat check one is our U23 winner in the weekend, Ruby West. Went a little, 10th and 12th for her as a U23 rider. So I was just trying to look for some other like heat checkers. I think that's the thing.
She's finishing above, unfortunately, our power rankings player who's sort of going through the biggest fall right now. You know, not the way I talked about her before, but Sunny Gilbert. So that may be a tough one. But we will have to wait till Thursday.
Thursday. So we'll be just in time. We'll be on our way to Iowa City. Yes. It'll be just in time to drop this is going to be a really interesting weekend then. Oh man, three races with a mix of so many Euros that are going to be here.
Yeah, this is when it gets weird of the whole European coming into it, and I have no idea how that's going to play out. I have no idea how the World Cups are going to come in there. You know, shoot, Tone Arts may be the top rider for all we know by the time we're done. You know, we come back to this 3 weeks from now. But that's just going to how it's going to play out. But then those guys all go back home and then everything sort of resets from there.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. We're excited. I think it's cool. I think that you've created something really neat, and it's awesome to see that it's already becoming a topic of conversation, like on the start line among the riders. It's neat that it's giving some coherence. It's giving some like just coherence and narrative to what's going on in the domestic cyclocross scene. And I think that's great.
Well, that was the goal in my own little head, but it was if anybody's actually going to buy into it, and, you know, we can all play around with this together and build this narrative. And that's what it took. It has to have the riders having fun with it as well, because that's all it is we're very serious about where these numbers are and where they fall out. But in the end, it's all to make the sport fun and easy to follow. And that's kind of the goal. So, nothing made me happier this weekend than all of the riders who were pissed off about where they were in the power rankings, and that means that it is successful.
I think the reviews range from bullshit to
bogus. It sucks. Yeah. It's flawed. We'll see how that whole plays out. Zach, thanks for stopping by to the Rochester Media Center and sitting in until holy cow 2 a.m to record for Cyclocross Radio.
It's been a blast. I'm looking forward actually to having you guys in my hometown in Madison. I think maybe the media centers that we can find during that trip might be kind of fun, a little bit better than the downtown Holiday Inn. I don't know. But yeah, no, thanks for having me.
I would just
me.
Like to say I love the downtown Holiday Inn. It is a proud sponsor of the Rochester Twilight Criterium and the Rochester Cyclocross. Yeah.
Yeah. How many times have you been here at this point? Number six?
Yeah.
Just keeps getting
five
better.
Or six. Yeah.
Oh, I should have just said thanks for having me. It's been fun. I really appreciate it. It's always fun to hang out and talk cyclocross with you guys into the wee hours of the morning after these weekends.
I'm hoping that we'll be able to do this again and get together again in Iowa and Madison as well. Bruce, thanks so much for stopping by.
Hey, good to be here. Thanks for having me. Yeah. I was hoping, you know, I haven't decided. I guess this is probably safer than trying to drive around at 2 a.m. based on how loopy I am at the moment. I probably, yeah.
Staying till Monday probably.
Yeah, that was a good idea. That was a good idea.
All right. Let's all get back to editing.
Sounds good. We'll see you in like 4 days.